It's the next year on PodTech.net. I'm Matt Kelly. We are here at the Renaissance Center in Detroit. The Challenge X competition has just completed, and we're having a blogger interview today with Mickey Bly. He's co-executive lead and judge of the Challenge X event from General Motors. Mickey, what is also your title at GM?
At General Motors, I'm the Director of Engineering for Hybrid Vehicle Integration. So I have the vehicle responsibility for all of GM's hybrid vehicles.
So I kind of wanted to talk about the Challenge X events, what it meant for General Motors to actually be here and help be a co-sponsor of this event, and then we'll kind of get into hybrids in general. There's been some news recently about the plug coming to the View, and of course then we'll talk about the Volt because it's in the news a lot, and the controversy on the blogosphere about the car. So
sure.
Lots to cover here today.
Okay.
Talk about the Challenge X and GM's sure. involvement in the event and what you hope to get out of it as a company.
Well, GM's been working with Department of Energy for about the last 15 years on different student events or student activities, just like Challenge X. Challenge X is just the latest of those competitions, but it's the best we've ever done. In fact, it's one of the most challenging ones we've ever done for the students. We've done a three-year competition this year, and we've actually overlaid the competition on top of General Motors' vehicle development process. So what we've been able to do is challenge the students to develop and design an alternative propulsion system in our Chevrolet Equinox, just like we would do here at General Motors. The first year of the competition was synthesis and analysis work. They didn't even have a car. They worked in the virtual world, doing all of their design, all their math work, analysis work. The second year, we actually delivered to them all equal-produced Chevy Equinoxes right off the line, delivered it to them, and their charge was to take that analysis work right into the vehicle and install that new technology into the vehicle. In fact, they were penalized if what their analysis work said they could do didn't actually work in the vehicle. So it was, you know, they had to do a lot of real work up front first. And then this is the end of year three, the third year of the competition. We're actually working on refinement of that technology in the vehicle, taking it to the almost ready for production level. We call it our 99% buy-off ride in GM. And it's that step right before we hand it to the manufacturing plants and say, here, go produce this.
So do you think some of the technology that these students actually came up with will eventually make it to a GM vehicle?
Well, the technologies itself absolutely will and are and have been in our vehicles. If you look at what the students have done with these vehicles, they've introduced six-speed transmissions. We have those in our cars. They've introduced diesel powertrains. We have those in our vehicles. They've introduced belt alternator starter hybrid systems. Those are in our vehicles. Some have done strong hybrid system, nickel metal hydride batteries, lithium ion batteries, which we're working on. Fuel cells, Waterloo team has been able to install a full functioning electric vehicle with a
solar
fuel cell.
Power.
We've had solar power charge plug-in part of the competition from one of the teams. So the technologies itself are absolutely relevant to what we're doing every day at GM. Now to your question, will this their actual solutions make it into a General Motors vehicle? You know, I would say right now we haven't introduced anything exactly into ours. We've gained a lot of learning, a lot of insights from the academic world because they really are on the cutting edge of a lot of things in the research environment.
The great thing about it that I've seen is that actually talking to some of the students in the competition is that they're actually have turned around and now are coming to work for General Motors. More than one of them have indicated that they are going to work once this competition is over for your company.
Yeah, we're really proud of the fact that not only can we take the research and the competitive environment of the competition, we've taken it to another level this time, and that's as a recruiting tool. I mean, to be very honest, we're using this as a recruiting tool to get some of the best, most dedicated, passionate automotive engineers in the country to come work for General Motors. In fact, we have 40 students we have hired from this competition right into General Motors. And the good thing about these students, day one, they're hitting the ground running just like any other engineer on my team. And the reason why is because for two or three years, they're working with the same technology, working with the same analysis tools, one of our own vehicles, and being able to just step right up and say, let's go, I'm ready to work. There's no downtime for these students when they show up.
This is a blogger interview. I want to introduce some of the other bloggers that are participating here today. We've got Matt Meyer from Groovy Green, Lyle Dennis from GM-World.com, and Sam Abulsamid, a well-known blogger for Autoblog Green, and another gentleman who I don't have his name tag, but it is Todd Cahoe from Green Car Journal. Let's get right to some of the products that are coming out right now from General Motors in terms of green products. We'll start with the Volt. The Volt is getting certainly a lot of press lately. In the blogosphere, people are actually pretty skeptical about whether this vehicle is going to come into production or not. What is going on with the Volt right now? And we're going to then ask some pretty pointed questions.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, the as you said, there is a lot of exciting technology at General Motors, especially in the hybrid and fuel cell activity. I've got the unique opportunity to see them all. My team is responsible for integrating every vehicle, hybrid vehicle, that General Motors is either producing or will produce in the next couple of years. And as you know, we've introduced the last couple of months the latest rendition of our BAS, or Bolt Alternator Starter Hybrid System, which is in our Saturn Green, Aura Green Line. Falls right behind the Saturn View Green Line, which has been very well received in the marketplace. In fact, a couple points during its production, it had 10 or 11 day turnaround time at the dealerships, which means it shows up and within 2 weeks it's gone in someone's hands. Outstanding reception in the marketplace there. We're taking that same technology and moving it into the Chevy Malibu later this year, and then the next generation view will have the same thing. So we're going mainstream with that BAS hybrid technology and a lot of different systems, a lot of different vehicles over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And just to continue on the view before we continue and get back to the Volt for a second, the plug is coming.
Absolutely. As Troy Clark announced out at the LA Auto Show when we did an interview a little bit earlier, at that time, we have committed our resources and energies into doing a View Green Line plug-in later in for production. We haven't announced the actual production date yet. And really, it's dependent upon the battery. We have really looked and are searching out there for the lithium-ion battery technology to help us do the plug-in and have all the reliability demands that are required from a customer today. And it is. We're right on the edge of that capability. In fact, we've signed two development agreements with two suppliers for that battery technology, which will enable or allow us to have a plug-in hybrid vehicle in the marketplace.
So I really want to talk about the batteries, because in my blogosphere community, we get hammered, and people are asking, what are the problems that you're having with this battery technology? Why not nickel metal hydride? Why not lead acid? I mean, it is proven technology today. There are people in my community who are driving a RAV4 EV, and it's got 100,000 miles on it, on a nickel metal hydride battery.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple technologies. First of all, lead acid. Lead acid has been around since cars have been around. And it is a technology that's very heavy. I mean, that's the problem with it. You put a bunch of lead acid batteries like we had to do in the EV1 in its early days, and even the parallel hybrid trucks that we put out over 3 or 4 years, they do have a finite life. They don't have a good shelf life to them if you have a lot of stand time. It's good, solid, robust for a 12-volt starter normal propulsion system. Nickel metal hydride is the mainstream today. Everybody's using nickel metal hydride. That is the standard in the hybrid vehicle industry. We're learning a lot. You know, one of the things that we do is guarantee these batteries for 8 years. And in General Motors, 100,000 miles. Some of our competitors are less than that, but around 100,000.
The nickel metal hydride, you're guaranteeing it for 8 years.
Absolutely. Our warranty is a 8-year, 100,000-mile warranty, and we're going to stand behind that. But the interesting thing about nickel metal hydride in that environment is you can't age those batteries much faster than natural calendar life. So to be, I guess, very direct on this, is that the battery suppliers are even saying they're not quite sure all the durability concerns out there that long, because the batteries haven't been around that long. Mm-hmm. Batteries haven't been on the road for 8 years. And that's really where the calendar life comes into play in the battery technology, not necessarily the miles. Mm-hmm. So the next step of that is lithium ion, which is really the breakthrough. Lithium ion's been around for a while. Probably half of your cell phones have a lithium ion battery in it. What's really the challenge in the battery industry right now is to take that small little lithium battery and drive a vehicle with it 40 miles, which is what our Chevy Volt's going to do, or the E-Flex propulsion system is going to be. So to your question about what is the problems with it, a little bit of unknown. They haven't been in use long enough to know if the durability is out there. So there's a lot of development there. Stability of the product itself. The manufacturing base. There's not a lot of suppliers out there that are in the game in lithium. We had a battery symposium about 2 or 3 months ago at GM, just to let everybody bring in all their technologies and find out what's out there. You know, we thought maybe we'd have a dozen or 20 companies show up. We had about 40 companies knocking on the door. Everybody wants to get into this business. And once that breaks through, once that availability is there, it's going to be a huge influx of capability in our hybrids.
What do you think about Altair Nano and their lithium battery technology?
I'm not familiar with them.
Okay. They've built a battery and they're able to do a quick charge of it in 10 minutes with high voltage, basically proving that a plug-in battery technology will work.
They're doing, it's a lithium titanate battery, okay. And the electrode they're using nano-sized particles, which they're claiming give them capacity to absorb more electrons, and also doesn't expand and contract. You don't have a thermal expansion contraction that you do with current lithium-ion batteries, so that's why they're able to charge it and discharge it fast, because they can do that without the electrode cracking.
Okay. Yeah, and again, I'm not familiar specifically with their technology, and the ability to charge a battery is not the issue. I mean, we have proven and we know that we can charge a battery 4, 6, 8 hours of charge time. Overnight, that's not going to be a problem for anybody. At work, that's not a problem for anyone. So the charge time is not necessarily the issue with plug-in. It's really the reliability, the robustness of that system.
But when you have an EV, a RAV EV4,
yep,
that's been on the road, getting 100,000 miles on a nickel metal hydride, what more do you need to know that the nickel metal hydride batteries actually work? You know, not talking about lithium, but going back to nickel metal hydride. And so once you figure out lithium, why don't you offer an upgrade kit, okay? Bring it out with nickel metal hydride, the Volt or whatever, and then once you figure out the lithium, offer an upgrade kit. That's another opportunity for a sale.
There's absolutely no reason why you couldn't do a scenario like that. We feel very comfortable and confident that, you know, in the next year, 2 years, we're going to see those breakthroughs. In fact, you may be aware, either earlier this week or end of last week, I've lost time with the competition here. We did announce that we have signed development agreements with lithium ion battery suppliers
for the Volt.
Now, is that
823 systems?
One of them is with a...
Two of them. One was with Continental doing the integration with A123 cells. The other one was with Compact Power for a division of LG Chem.
So, now, as I understand, A123 Systems is also going to be partnering with Cobasys on this, and at least in the EV community.
Not on our solution here for
okay.
the Volt. That's on
right.
the View plug-in.
Okay, great.
Keep them separate.
Cobasys
AB123 is one of the two development partners on the View plug-in.
Okay.
And we've gone a different direction on the Volt.
On the Volt. Okay, great.
Different supplier direction.
Great.
What happened to the Johnson Saft Controls scenario? They were working together on lithium-ion.
They still are, and that is the second of our two development suppliers on our Saturn View Green Line plug-in.
But so, not for the Volt.
They are not currently one of the development partners for the Volt. Doesn't mean they're not competing for it.
Were they one of the original 13 applicants that the two were chosen from?
They are in the pool, yes. We are not excluding others. Those are the two that we felt were ready to move forward with right now.
Does GM have any interest in buying a battery maker and making batteries themselves, yourselves, or is it why farm it out to someone else when you have all the resources in-house potentially to do the job the way you want it done, the time line you'd like to make it happen?
That way you can control it as a business practice.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, I guess, pros and cons to that, any business decision you make. And you could talk about batteries, you could talk about tires or seats or powertrains. You know, we've made some very strategic directions and decisions like our powertrains. We think we have some of the best capability of engineering powertrains or engines and transmissions and manufacturing of those. We're looking at all options out there from a battery supply. The thing is that the battery supply, you wouldn't want to limit yourself right now because one, the technology, the chemistry, none of those things have matured up yet. So you wouldn't want to put all your focus in one area and just forget about everybody else that's out there developing some very innovative stuff. I mean, you look at A123, which started at MIT, basically in the research environment, you wouldn't want to miss some of that capability if you got all of your focus in here and have to commit to one area. So as it develops, we'll look at all kinds of business options. But also, if you look at General Motors' business practices over the last couple of years and what Rick Wagoner's doing, he is clearly making sure we're focused on the design and development of automotive vehicles and solutions like that, and maybe not getting into other businesses right now around. We're trying to keep focused on the mainstream engineering of vehicles.
Not necessarily.
I mean, you've seen some of the things that we've had to do, whether it's GMAC. We looked at Allison that has been announced that is being consideration for sale. There's a lot of other examples like that.
Philip.
Okay.
Sort of a follow-up on the question that Matt was asking about the different battery technologies. What are you looking at in terms of end of life of different batteries? And is that something that you're considering and thinking about as you're looking at...
You mean disposal? Is that the question?
Yeah, whether Absolutely. It's disposal, recycling, how you
Reclaiming?
Deal with them. Exactly.
Yeah, Philip, to kind of repeat your question that you had about end-of-life batteries and disposal, you know, that is really going to be a question that a lot of people have to start answering as we get the high volumes of disposable recyclability. With nickel metal hydride, the nickel content in there is very, very much extractable when you dispose of these batteries. And, you know, we want to reuse those and encourage reuse of those systems. We're working through that a lot right now with our public policy group. To make sure we understand exactly how we want to communicate that, how we want to institute that, how do we want to set up a recycling system within the confines of the North American environment, how do you ship this stuff? You know, lithium ion shipping on airplanes has some limitations to it at large sizes and large vehicle levels. So you got to work through all of those things. And you know, Matt, going back to your question about why not on the lithium ion, maybe I can get right back to that and answer. You know, lithium-ion batteries have been out for a while. If you take your laptop computers, and if
look how those explode into flames.
Everybody got very comfortable with the technology, but you know, a couple of the suppliers of that had to recall them because they had some issues with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we want to make sure. And oh, by the way, if your battery on your laptop dies out in about a year and a half, you don't complain. You throw it away and order another one from Dell, or they give you a new one. We're talking about 10 years. 150,000 miles, every vehicle
mm-hmm.
has to be reliable and durable and capable, because that's what we've committed to do with our customers.
Are you guys looking at vehicle-to-grid technology and the promise that that represents with the plug-in, that you can actually then store potential energy in these batteries? And to go back in terms of a recycling opportunity that these batteries represent, envisioning, you know, little warehouses stored in local communities where these batteries then operate almost as little power stations in terms of a recycling thing. Once it's done from your car, it still is usable. It just doesn't have the energy to run your car, but you can still store energy in it to basically help get us off of foreign oil and keep us energy independent.
Yeah, it's a very good concept, and I'll just deviate from your question a little bit. One of our teams in Challenge X, getting back to that, San Diego State University, they were having a hard time with their competition, their vehicle, because they didn't have a good battery supplier supporting them. They actually had some lead acid batteries in their vehicle, and they were looking for the move to lithium or move to nickel metal. And they actually, after Hurricane Katrina, there was a whole bunch of these batteries from flooded vehicles and hybrids that were being scrapped out and pulled out. They hooked up with one of the recyclers who donated a whole bunch. They individually went through the batteries, pulled all the good pieces out of, reused them, and put them in their vehicle. And this year they came in fifth place. Last year they didn't even finish.
Hmm.
So kind of a neat little story there of kind of that recyclability concept. But to your question, right now GM doesn't have any active plans on that that I'm aware of, and I probably would be.
Another thing that's come up in recent weeks is Tesla Motors has started up an energy storage group, where basically they're making their battery technology that they've developed available to other car makers. They've done a deal with Think in Norway.
Yep.
Is that something that GM would consider taking a look at?
Yeah, to be honest with you, at our battery symposium, they were there. So some of you are there from the press, probably saw them. So they're absolutely shopping their technology around.
What other reason do you cite besides power density that you think makes lithium ion better than nickel metal hydride? I mean, people talk about it's much more power per density.
Yeah,
it's
power
lighter, perhaps.
Power density, lighter is obviously two of the reasons, but the other thing that you actually can use the battery much more. If you know the battery state of charge, which is this band of region where you can use a battery, charge it and discharge. Nickel metal hydride has a band, let's just say plus or minus 10% within a window. So you have 100% of the battery. You only can use about 20% of that battery. Lithium ion actually allows you to take maybe 50, 60, maybe even 70% usage range of that battery, the energy you're putting in and taking it out. So you can go much higher charges and much higher discharges and not hurt or affect the long-term viability of the battery. That's one of the huge enablers we have there. A little bit in the hot weather performance, also some improvement there. Not much better in the cold.
When you're talking about hydrogen, why is General Motors spending so much time and effort on this when in my lifetime, anyways, the hydrogen highway isn't going to be built?
Well, you can't be so narrow focused that you only work on what's relevant today. And the reason why we put a lot of our resources and our R&D resources into vehicles like the Equinox fuel cell program that's going to
be in customers' hands this year. You may not know that, but we're going to put 100 vehicles.
Project Driveway.
Project Driveway into vehicles, customer hands, and let them start driving full fuel cell hydrogen vehicles. We believe at General Motors that the answer to sustainability and reduction of petroleum oil and the even the energy security of the nation is going to be diversification. And while in sometime in our lifetime, we will see hydrogen starting to be introduced, we're also going to see internal combustion engines be around. We're going to see hybrid electric vehicles be around. And they're going to continue to be around for the for the foreseeable future. We don't see at any time any of those three areas of advanced propulsion technology is going to disappear.
But the billions of dollars of infrastructure that are going to be needed in order to actually create this hydrogen highway, why not instead try to devote to something that is actually more easily attainable right at our fingertips, which is the plug and electricity?
Well, and we are. I mean, we have two vehicles we've announced already that will be able to do the plug-in capability, both the Green Line, View Green Line, and the Chevy Volt or the E-Flex system. But to your very specific question on why are we investing in the hydrogen economy and the hydrogen fuel capability, who says it has to be everywhere? Mm. Maybe you just focus it in some very high-density areas like New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Detroit. You can have a huge impact with very small distribution lanes and satisfy a large percentage, and I'll have to get you the numbers about it. We've done the analysis of if you go after the key population density areas, you can affect a lot of people very quickly. You also can look at some of the infrastructures that aren't developed yet in other worlds. You know, there's not a fuel station on every corner like there is in the U.S. Why not, if you're going to put an infrastructure in, start with a new infrastructure? You're going to have to put something there. Why couldn't it be hydrogen at that time?
My name's Scott Anderson. I'm from Diesel and Hydrogen Forecast. And Toyota has said that it's going to reduce its hybrid, the Synergy Drive system, to the point over the next, I think, 5 years where it's going to be about equal expense as a standard ICE drivetrain. GM's doing two-mode. You're looking at plug-in hybrid technology on the View. What's that doing for GM, hybrids, and are those costs going to dissipate over the same period of time?
Absolutely. Sure. I don't know the exact facts that you just quoted with Toyota, but let me just give you a really real-world example. Our BAS, or our belt alternator starter system that we introduced last year in our View Green Line, we introduced it at about $2,000 of added cost to that vehicle. If you go and check the Aura Green Line, which came out about 7 months later, that number's down to about $1,600 of cost to the customer. So within a period of less than a year, we've taken out, do the math, about 20% of the cost of the system. And as we get more applications, you get volume up with it, you get your engineering costs paid off and your investment paid off, that will continue to drive down. In general, and this isn't necessarily specific to General Motors, about every cycle of learning, you reduce the cost about 50%.
50-50.
About 50%, 50. That's pretty typical in electronics and technology like batteries and things like that. So, I mean, our competitor at Toyota, absolutely. You know, they've been able to reduce their costs down significantly because they've had a couple of generations ahead of us. I mean, the facts are the facts. Our job, my job at General Motors, is to get our product out there. We have 12 programs that we've announced, over 12 programs that we've announced will be introduced. And, you know, we've got
hybrid
programs announced. And by the way, we got a lot more we haven't announced and probably will in the next year. So we're going to that high volume. We're going to make some big impacts as far as being able to reduce the cost, and we'll continue to do that.
I'm just wondering if you're seeing anything out there in the automotive industry from other brands, other automakers, that particularly excites you that you want to try to institute within General Motors.
Well, you know, from a hybrid point of view, I think that we have introduced the two technologies that will have the most impact on reduction of petroleum oil. That's our BAS system, which we can go very high volume at very quickly, and our two-mode system, which is better than any other hybrid system on the road today. We will set the standard with that. You can see by the other OEMs that have joined with us with that system that it is by far the next step in the hybrid technology and strong hybrids. So from a hybrid point of view, no, I'm very happy, very pleased with what we have.
I was curious, was there a particular reason that you launched your hybrids in the Saturn lineup as opposed to any of your other brands?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think you said you talked to Jill Lajak just recently on this. Jill and her team, who she's a general manager of Saturn brand, have just really embraced the pillars of their brand and the revitalization that's going on in the Saturn line.
And one of the things is safety and security, and the other area is environmental friendliness. And what better place to introduce this technology into that? It's been well received. It's a younger market. Those that are probably maybe more conscientious of the green initiatives or a green purchase power. And we went after that for a very specific reason. The first two of our applications have been that. And as you can tell, we're going to introduce a two mode in that application, the front drive two mode. And the plug-in, it's being well-received in that area of our business.
Did the fact that the EV1 also coming out of Saturn play a role in that, do you think?
I don't know specifically if it had anything to do with that.
Sort of a big-picture question. General Motors is talking about energy diversity, reducing the use of petroleum, all of the E-Flex system, the electric car. And I wonder if the economy of the oil companies is, you know, anything that GM is talking with any of the major oil companies like ExxonMobil. What's their view on this, and how are you guys working together?
Well, I know I haven't, personally. I can only imagine some of our senior leaders, have some occasions to run into those. I just can't tell you if there's been any active discussion on diversity and things like that. Right. What I will tell you is that there's been a lot of work in E85 introductions. We have a west to east coast process that's going on right now, which we're trying to team up with not only the distribution of the E85 fuels, but also the recognition, the advertising, as we've gone from the west coast, working our way across to the east coast, teaming up with different distribution points, marketing, website. If you go to OnStar, if you may not be aware of this, right now if you push the blue button in OnStar, say I have an E85 car, it will tell you where the closest E85 fuel station is around you. So we have every fuel station around the country programmed in, and the advisor can tell you. So a lot of those initiatives are going on. Other than that, I couldn't comment on
it. It's interesting because the entire auto industry is so linked to the gasoline and oil industry historically, and now we're talking about a fundamental frame shift where I think Larry Burns said 37 billion gallons less gasoline being used. And I just wonder, if there's pressure. Obviously, we all want that to happen, but is there pressure from the oil companies but that we don't know about?
Not that I can comment on.
I want to actually ask another question then about ethanol and the fact that while it shows great promise, it's already starting to have a ripple effect in terms of the increase in crop prices, which, has a potentially downside to it, where people in developing nations and even the poor in this country see an increase in their cost of food. How do you balance out the two?
Well, I don't know if your fact is correct there on the crop prices, and it may or may not be. I'm not aware of that, but we are very sure that in order to have a sustainable economy from a fuel usage point of view, we've got to look at things like biodiversity, biodiesel, biogasolines, and it's a balance. If you don't do anything, things like $4, $5, $6 a gallon fuel prices can happen when you have shock events like Katrina and things like that. So you've got to have that diversification in the marketplace to be able to handle things like that.
But are you looking more at cellulosic ethanol to make E85? And are you looking more at algae to produce biodiesel as opposed to soy and things like that?
Well, the leading provider of ethanol in the past has been based corn, a crop derivative. We are absolutely interested in and working with a number of companies that are looking at the cellulosic ethanol production. And I'll tell you that it shows a lot of promise, and probably soon you'll start seeing a lot of breakthroughs in those areas. So yes, we're supporting those as far as investigation of them. But the real issue is ethanol. How do you get the ethanol? We'll let a lot of very smart companies figure out how the best way to get that ethanol produced.
I'm sorry if you already asked this because I entered late, but how important is the plug-in view for the advancement of the Volt down the line? How important is it to get that plug-in view on the road?
Yeah, great question, and I probably answer that once a week in my engineering reviews that I'm doing on the programs. And we're using it as a lot of fundamental controls, supplier development in the charger area, interface decisions that we're making, trying to understand. I have, again, the fortunate, the lucky opportunity to work on both of them. So I'm driving my team to learn as much possible from that system, including the battery development. We're learning a lot of things. Good news is, we're probably 6 months ahead on the plug-in Saturn View than we were from the E-Flex from kicking off the opportunity. And we're learning a lot.
6 months from the plug-in. plug-in view?
Well, we announced it about 6 months before. The plug-in view was announced roughly 6 months before the Volt concept car was. So, you know, you can figure that's about how we're working on them.
So 2009 then as a model year for plug-in view, is that still the bogey?
Yeah, I don't know if we've announced that publicly, and I just can't tell you to confirm that. I know what I'm working on, but I'd rather not. I'd rather check to see who's announced what out there before I tell you when the plug-in's coming up.
Is there a competition between Saturn and the Chevy team to bring a plug-in to market first? Is there going to be a surprise if the Vue comes out first with a plug?
No, there's no competition at all. My team is responsible for every brand, every hybrid system in General Motors from a vehicle integration point of view. My job is to get them all done when the big guys tell me to get them done.
Is it possible we might see the Vue plug-in before the Volt?
I can't tell you how they're currently timed.
Will we definitely see the Chevy Volt?
Mr. Wagner has committed that program to production, as you guys have heard, I think, his board of directors speech over the weekend, and we're actively working on it.
Is there anything that can kill the program from now until the time it's supposed to be announced?
That's kind of a magic crystal ball question. There's a lot of things that can kill any program, but there's a lot of energy behind it, a lot of engineering resources have been put on top of it. We've got people just working as hard as they can on it every day. Our job is to deliver.
I just wanted to ask you a quick question. How soon do you think that I, as a consumer, would be able to walk into a GM dealership and purchase a hybrid system on any vehicle as I would OnStar or a digital radio or leather seating? So it would be an option on every single vehicle in the lineup instead of having to choose specific vehicles to use that.
That's a great question. Right now, we haven't announced a portfolio that supports that. So from a General Motors point of view, I can't tell you that's publicly announced. I don't even think any of our competitors have announced that publicly with actual plans.
Well, I think Toyota has indicated in recent weeks that within the next 4 to 5 years, they want to have hybrid systems available on every vehicle they build.
Yeah, there's a lot of wants. Your key word was one.
Well, they've also indicated in recent days that their initial plans to put lithium-ion batteries in the next generation Prius are being pushed back.
Well, I'll wrap up here at this point then, and just ask you, Mickey Bly, to give your final thoughts on the state of General Motors and its environmental policy and position and where you stand right now and what's ahead for the future for the company as well as the global consumer.
Sure. You know, first of all, thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity to sit here and talk with you guys at such a great event with Challenge X. I put a lot of my heart and soul and my people into executing the Challenge X competition, because really what you're seeing here is that future not only of the automobile and the technology, but some of these engineering students are the future of the automotive engineer. And GM has been committed to activities like this because we want to continue to have not only the technology, but the influx of talent coming into the organization. And that's really kind of a very short way of saying General Motors is fully committed to continue developing advanced propulsion solutions. We see diversification as being the need, and I tell you, I couldn't be in a better place than General Motors to work right now with the leadership support from Rick Wagner down to my technicians in the garage. It is a great place. Everybody's energized, enthused, supported, working on this. Mr. Wagner came out last Friday and spent 2 hours with these kids. And, it was just showing, again, his commitment to make sure the organization is working on the right things.
Well, congratulations on a great event and being part of it and helping it come to fruition. I want to make sure I extend a thanks to all the bloggers here today. We have Scott Anderson from Diesel and Hydrogen Forecast. We've got Todd Cahill from Green Car General, Matt Mayer from Groovy Green, Lyle Dennis from GM-Volt.com, and also
Philip Profrock.
And Sam Abdul-Samid from Autoblock Green. And again, an extended thanks to Mickey Bly for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
I'm Matt Kelly for the next gear on podtech.net.